Hello, listeners. This podcast is hosted by International Idea. In the next minutes, we will help you make sense of what's happening today in democracy worldwide.
Hello and welcome to Peer to Peer, International Idea's elections podcast series. Peer to Peer is co-hosted by me, David Tauris, and by my colleague, Erik Asplund. Together, we speak with practitioners from around the world to share knowledge, experience, and good practice. This part of our series focuses on training, education, and research in electoral administration. Each episode includes a guest who provides insights on how the Election Commission in their country prepares frontline workers for Election Day operations, and how it provides voters and other stakeholders with the information that they need to make the election a success. This week, we are taking a deep dive into education and training during the COVID-19 pandemic, and we'll be focusing in particular on preparations for two gubernatorial elections in the Nigerian states of Edo and Ondo. Our guide is Ibrahim Sani, Senior Lecturer in Comparative Politics at Usmanu Danfodio University, Sokoto, and Director of Research at the Electoral Institute and the Independent National Election Commission of Nigeria. Welcome, Ibrahim, and thank you very much for joining us for this important conversation.
Thank you for having me.
As with all our conversations, I'd like to begin this one by asking you to take me and our international listeners through the electoral administration system in your country. Could you please give us a very brief summary of the body or bodies responsible for the management of Nigeria's elections, focusing particularly, if you could, on their mandate and structure?
Thank you very much, David. To begin with, the Independent National Electoral Commission, as it is known now, INEC in Nigeria, is mandated by the Nigerian 1999 Constitution as amended to conduct elections into all elected positions in the country. It's headed by a national chairman, currently by Professor Mahmoud Yakub, together with 12 other national commissioners. That serve as the commission. The commission has a secretary who is nominated from or appointed by the commission from the major team of the civil servant that made up of the commission staff. So under the commission, there is an institute, the Electoral Institute, the one that I'm working in now, and is headed by a director general. And then under the DG's office, there are two departments, the research and documentation department and the training department, with an ILO, International Liaison Office, attached to the office of the DG. Now, there are other departments down the structure under INEC. For example, the key ones, we have operations, we have finance, we have procurement, we have a voter register, we have ICT, we have party election, party monitoring. We have planning and monitoring department. We have ICPC, International Protocols and Liaison Office. These are the major departments of legal and recently two were added. We have Alternative Dispute Resolution Department, and then the Litigation and Prosecution Department.
If I may, we are talking about a single election management body, and as our sort of conversation progresses, we're going to talk a little bit more about the Electoral Institute. And the Electoral Institute forms part of the Electoral Commission or INEC. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And the INEC is carrying out the education and the training sort of mandate, or assisting the Electoral Commission in conducting that part of its mandate. Is that right?
The Electoral Institute is the training and research arm of the commission.
Right.
Now, whenever there is an election, the training for electoral personnel, ad hoc staff, those that are mandated to conduct the field work of conducting election at the field. I'm referring to the polling unit now. The institute is responsible for training them. So the training department in the institute and the institute are mandated by the commission to train all electoral staff that are required for an election, either at the national level. For example, now that we are preparing for 2023 general elections, all the personnel that are required to man the polling units that we have are to be trained by the institute. The same thing with, like, since this the election in context now is Edo and Ondo, it was the institute that actually trained all the personnel required to conduct, the election in both Edo and Ondo states.
Really interesting. Okay, thank you for clarifying that for us. And does the institute's work extend to the training or the stakeholders who aren't members of the commission, whether sort of ad hoc or sort of permanent? I'm thinking of, for example, the media or members of the sort of security agencies. Does it extend to those stakeholders as well?
Whenever there is a training requirement from a given institution that has to do with election, for example, if it's a political party, they will send their requirement via the election and party monitoring department. And same is now communicated to the institute. And the institute now provides the manpower to train the party agent, for example. Now, if you talk about the security agents, that are those that are responsible for providing security during the election period, it's also the commission, that train the security personnel for the conduct of elections whenever it's a time for an election. So, in a response directly to your question, is the response is like this: the institute train all personnel that are required to be trained, either for as staff, as ad hoc staff of the commission, or those that are to serve, for example, as a security for personnel for the election. The institute train them, including the party agents.
Thank you. Now, our conversation today is focused on the preparations for the Edo and Ondo governorship elections, which took place on the 19th of September and the 10th of October 2020. But before we delve into the details of those preparations, I think it's worth reminding our listeners of the global COVID-19 context of the elections at that time. So preparations took place when the pandemic was still in its infancy. International IDEA data shows that in April and May, and then again in September 2020, more elections were being postponed than were being held. So consequently, the sort of administrators of these elections didn't benefit from the best practice that has subsequently emerged. Returning to Nigeria, how prevalent was COVID-19 at this time?
Our audience could recall that the first Nigerian case was confirmed of COVID-19, was confirmed on 28th February 2020. And from there on, like all other places across the globe, the figures and the number of cases kept rising. And the same trend happened in Nigeria too. Close to the period of the election, September and October, in the case of Edo and Ondo, the confirmed cases in Nigeria hit to the figure of 55,000 in terms of confirmed cases, and then about over 1,000 plus death cases. And therefore, it becomes very urgent and demanding for the commission to come up with an active and strong position of how the two elections could be held without much casualty. Of course, the commission came up with its policy on the conduct of COVID-19, election under COVID-19. And on that basis, the role, arrangement for the conduct of election is set, and from there on, the commission was able to conduct the two elections across the two states, and of course with very much less casualty in terms of COVID contraction.
Thank you, Ibram. So you paint a picture of rising sort of case numbers, as was sort of seen across the world. Was there ever any sort of prospect of these two elections being postponed? As I mentioned earlier, you know, many of these many elections around the world were being postponed. Was there any prospect of that happening in Nigeria?
I think for Edouard, although that wasn't much of an issue for two obvious reasons. I mean, the first is that we had some by-elections that the commission had to conduct before the Edouard Ondo. For example, the Jaws and about 15 cases of by-elections were due before Edouard Ondo governorship elections. And the commission had to look into those by-elections and kept on postponing. And on that basis, the commission has learned over time on how and the best way to approach the issues of COVID. And there, when it's due to have the two governorship elections, the commission has already prepared in terms of how and the best possible ways to go with the election, and it's executed as on the basis of the arrangement it has set up to conduct the elections. Of course, with collaboration with other organizations in the country. I'm referring to strictly here the presidential Tax Force Tax Force Committee and the NCNC, the Nigerian Center for Disease Control.
That's really interesting to hear. The sort of interagency collaboration is a really interesting sort of point and an important part of we've been seeing at IDEA in responses to or holding elections in a COVID environment. Let's now turn our conversation to the training of poll workers, which is often a very big part of election preparations because of the large numbers involved. Ibrahim, are you able to give us an idea of how many polling workers were recruited for the two governorship elections?
For Edo, you recall Edo state is a composite of is made up of 18 local governments, and that translates into 192 restriction areas, with the polling units of 2,627. And in each polling unit, at least four persons are required. One presiding officer and three assistant presiding officers. And if you add that all, it will give you 20,974 poll workers for Edo State alone.
Wow.
Now, similar local governments exist also in Ondo states. And Ondo has, instead of, as against Edo, 203 decision areas, made up of 3,009 polling units. That's at the same time, because that by then we had what we call voting point. So, but nonetheless, the number reduces to 17,000. The number of polling staff required is 17,913. Add this into Edo, you will have a total of 38,877. That is what is required as far as the two governorship elections are concerned.
Goodness me, this is a very large number of polling workers alone. And was the number of polling station workers required to sort of run these polling stations affected by the COVID-19 pandemic in any way?
Yeah, actually, at the very before COVID, the number was three persons per polling unit. The commission decided to add one so that because there are additional responsibilities attached to both the presiding officer and assistant presiding officers down the ladder. So on the basis of that, the commission decided to have another one more person per polling unit, such that the responsibilities now could be shared equally among the four of them. So, yes.
That's really interesting to hear, and we will then revisit this issue of these added responsibilities in a sort of COVID pandemic shortly. Prior to the pandemic, how did the Institute conduct poll worker training?
Prior to COVID, to the pandemic, it's a face-to-face activity. The Commission believed, and the Institute as well, believed that the personal contact is very critical when it comes to the learning process and the training of poll workers. For obvious reasons, the tension that is attached to election day through the poll workers requires that they understand the basics and the rudiments of all the processes. And therefore, the Commission uses face-to-face training. Of course, there are some supplements. We for example, in 2019, before the COVID, we had CDs, the block by block activities at the polling unit. Enable poll worker, either as presiding or assistant presiding officer of 1, 2, 3, could have as the CD running on his computer or copy the same content to his phone so that he could watch and view the process as if it's happening. That way, plus the face-to-face training, his understanding of the process is really broadened, and the expectation is that he would deliver as much as expected.
Ibrahim, that's really interesting. And just to sort of revisit this, because our connection wasn't great for just a part of your response there. So these CDs contain sort of programs which would allow poll workers to sort of experience the work that they would be carrying out in a polling station. Is that right? It would sort of recreate that as much as possible, yeah, that environment.
It's an animation of the whole entire electoral process that is expected of each poll worker at the polling unit on the election day. So it gives them, if you like, a video animation of the whole process, not just just the theoretical description of it. No, it's an animated description such that it's a video form, and they can follow off to see all the activities that are required of them at the polling unit.
Can you briefly explain for us, Ibrahim, how training curricula are maintained and updated?
The what we call it is a training manual or curriculum. The manual is subject to update and review whenever there is any new introduction into the processes. Let me explain further. Before COVID, when we had the 2019 general election, the manual was updated before the election, before the 2019 election, general elections. And immediately after that, when COVID came to the fore, the commission's guide policy on the conduct of election under COVID-19 came up with certain activities that are built into the process, and that demands for the revisit of the curriculum and the manual. And on that basis, it was updated almost instantly before the Edo Ondo governorship election. So if I might also go further, I could also inform you that now that we are preparing toward Anambra, there are certain things that are being introduced by the Commission. For example, the INEC SANS app, which is an application designed by the Commission to track INEC personnel and material wherever they are, and give them the chance to communicate back to the back end the tendency for a potential of violence wherever they are. The violence could be of any form. That's also demanded that the manual be updated. So it's the update is like almost instant. Whenever there is anything new in the electoral process or anything that needs to some slight changes within the guidelines of the conduct of the election as released by the commission, the manual are definitely be reviewed and updated.
Wonderful. Now, the commission's COVID-19 election.
And the updates, and the update is not done by the institute alone. What we do is we call all respective department, concerns department of the commission, and we will sit down with them as a committee. Then we will go into the manual one after the other, taking notes of areas where there are needs for us to update and upgrade. Then we will do that. We also now at the same time go through whatever has been released by the commission, either as in form of the election guidelines or in form of the policy, like I mentioned, of the COVID-19. And we will go through the policy and look at, see out those things that require to be in the manual as update. And we do that with almost all the department, in particular operations, legal, ICT. These are very VR and PNM. These are very critical departments that must be on board before we could update and upgrade the model. And their response is almost as prompt as possible.
So you've described how this is a very fluid and sort of responsive process, able to sort of respond to sort of changes in the way that that elections are administered, but also that it is a very collaborative process, bringing all sort of players into it. Okay, that's really good to hear. So the commission's COVID-19 election policy and guidelines from the Nigeria Center for Disease Control, published in May and July 2020, and you've already touched on that for us, was amongst the earliest African policy and guidance. And these documents required changes in the way in which polling stations were run and poll worker training was carried out, meaning presumably that changes were required to both the training curricula and the delivery. Can you give us just a couple of examples of these changes?
Yeah, of course. Let's take the training first. The training venue, we insist on having a venue that is spacious enough to take and cater for the implementation of the space, the 2 meter feet spacing that is required of COVID-19. So when we deploy to the field for the training, the in-person training, the commission insists on maintaining the social distance of 4 feet, and therefore the class, the venues for the training were held on that basis. Of course, there are instances where one would see some non-compliance, but nonetheless, much of the large percentage of what we've done during Edouan Ondo, there are for an extent a reasonable number of compliance with the social distancing requirement of COVID-19. And then, as I said, at the same time, there isn't any one is not allowed into the training venue except his temperature has been taken by the thermometer gun. So the temperature check is also applied while entering the training venue. And then at the same time, the face masks, I recall when we went out, we insist on all trainees have and trainers have their face masks with them. And that was enforced to an extent. And we will say that from the commission side, of course, there is a large number of percentage of compliance. Now, if we go down to the polling unit, the election period, the first changes that happen is the structure of the polling units. Before, we usually have one single queue for prospective voters to cast their vote. But now, what we did is during COVID is we create two queues. One out in the outer part of the polling unit and one in the inner part of the polling unit. And social distance is also strictly complied with. Of course, there are reports and there are instances of non-compliance indeed. And I know when somebody looked at the news, would come across some of them. But the commission insists on having two queues, polling units. And the APO3, which is Assistant Presiding Officer 3, is charged with the responsibility of making sure that both the inner and the outer queue maintain social distance. And he introduced into the inner queue when the next person on the inner queue has moved out, has cast his vote and left, and then he will introduce the next person. That's how we manage the polling. And like I've said before, there are cases of non-compliance, of course, but to an extent, all the staff of the commission, both permanent and ad hoc, have tried the best they could in enforcing the COVID-19 protocols as established by the Presidential Task Force and the NCNC, plus the INEC guidelines of conducting election under COVID.
Ibrahim, thank you. So you paint a picture in which there are some important changes, both to the way in which training was delivered, ensuring that appropriate training facilities are found. One might assume that in previous years the same facilities might have been used again and again, and now those might have to be changed. But also big changes to the way in which the polling stations were operating. So you now have a much more sort of complex, sort of two-tier queuing system that you're describing there. And all this has to be achieved in a very short space of time. Perhaps sort of give us two or three examples, if you can, of the challenges that the Institute faced in implementing these changes.
No, the first thing is, COVID-19 came with lockdown, and a lot of people were locked into their houses. And when the partial unlocking began, and people were asked to come out for the training, and of course, you could see the rate at which people are looking for anything they could do to sustain a living. Now that creates a huge population that are coming to the training place. So controlling such a huge population is not an easy thing. So that's one of the challenges, of course, that the commission has encountered. And then I think the most important now is the fact that the coronavirus is a novel virus, that there isn't any clear examples elsewhere that one could put his hand and learn from. That really posed a serious challenge to the commission. However, like I've said, the institute with the mandate given to it by the commission has done its best. You see that all possible things that need to be done to ensure that the training is delivered was done, and we've done it. And of course, the challenges, there are challenges here and there. And the recruitment, of course, of people is another area of challenge, because even though in one area you will have a large number coming for the recruitment, because the NYSC MOU that exists between INEC and the National Youth Service Corps. The National Youth Service Corps, if I may explain,
yes,
is a body responsible for conduct for managing those who have finished university degree, and they are to carry out a 1 year service to the nation, and it's from that pool that the commission usually recruit for its ad hoc staff. So by the fact of the experience of COVID-19. Then the challenge of how to even get the core members attend the training is another thing. I could recall when I was in Edo, there was that instance. We had only one single hall of NYSC, who are the major presiding officers of the commission. But so we had to blend with other students to augment the differences. Those are the major challenges encountered, of course.
And it was so the challenge of having these polling workers attend these mandatory training sessions was and their reluctance was due to the sort of public health sort of concerns, was it?
I think the reluctance came not really from them in particular, because the institute that NYSC that is managing them has to agree to release them to us. But then that was overcome later on. Of course, when the commission engaged the NYSC, and of course the understanding and the measures put in place to serve as a protective measures for the tendencies for one to contact COVID-19, give them the hope, and then they turn out then appeared good, and we were able to conduct the election.
Wonderful, thank you. And it's actually takes us very nicely on to talk a little bit about voter and civic education. So voters themselves are, of course, the largest and sort of arguably the most important electoral stakeholder. And as we have sort of discussed in earlier episodes, motivating voters to go and to cast their ballots and to do so correctly and safely through voter and civic education is of critical importance. And this is particularly so in the context of a pandemic. What methods and media does the Institute employ to reach Nigerian voters?
Voter education is not within the mandate of the Institute. However, the Commission, INEC, has a particular department called voter education and publicity. Now, in the first instance, after the outbreak of COVID-19, the Commission called a meeting, a Zoom meeting, with the media houses, both print and electronic, and engaged them as part of its quarterly meeting with critical stakeholders, which media is one. And during that meeting, a lot of issues were discussed, a lot of the policy was interrogated by together with them, and then from there on, the guidelines and the appropriate ways of reaching out to the voters were mapped out, and each media house is left with the responsibility of going back to create own ways of. Of course, the commission now did its own. A lot of engagement were held with the media houses, like I've mentioned, both print and electronic. The commission also issued out a lot of jingles of voter education. If you read my article, my write off on Nigerian case, you would come across areas where several jingles were confirmed. In fact, the media outreach was such that INEC Citizen Contact Center was so functional, and in Benin and Akure City, that's on the Edo and Ondo, the ads on frequency increase when the elections get closer. So the INEC Twitter handle by then at Twitter was functional. Facebook was also used. Instagram and YouTube accounts were all used for the purpose of getting to Nigerian voters and letting them know that they need to exercise their franchise with or without COVID-19. And COVID-19 shouldn't be a blockage for them to exercise and their responsibility, particularly the two almost, over 3 million voters that are to cast their vote in Edo and Ondo, if you add them together.
Ibrahim, thank you so much for joining us today. It was a really, really insightful conversation. And you've already alluded to it earlier, but I'd like to highlight again, for those who are interested in learning more about the administration of the Edo and Ondo governorship elections, Ibrahim has written a fantastic case study for us, which can be accessed via the background reading section of this podcast episode, and a case study on the Elections Institute written by the former chairperson of the Independent National Election Commission, Maurice Iwu, can also be found there. For any suggestions or recommendations, feel free to email us at elections@idea.int. My name is David Tauris. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Democracy Ideas podcast. Keep following International Idea on social media. We need all of you to participate in constructing better societies. Goodbye.